what are the demands of the marchers?
Well, this march is called No One is Illegal, which sort of gives a good idea of our politics. We reject the idea that we can define away human beings as being illegal. There's no such thing as illegal human beings except unjust laws. And really what the situation is that there's a lot of people, hundreds of thousands actually, that don't have status. And so our demands are that there should be a regularization program so that people who don't have status here can get status. We also are calling for an end to detentions and deportations, and also we are asking for the abolition of security certificates.
Can you explain what it means to be non-status?
Well, I'm not a non-status person myself, and in the end, non-status people are quite eloquent, and during this march, we've heard a lot of very moving and articulate testimonies from non-status people themselves, but I guess to answer that question, it means to be a part of a society that is the most exploited. It means living a life of anguish and fear, because you can never quite organize your life, because you're never quite sure whether the life that you're making now will continue to be the life you can make, because you might be deported or detained or removed. If you look at our labor force and you look at the most exploited sectors of the labor force, you'll see a lot of what are non-status people. That's a quick answer, but really that's the kind of thing that needs to be answered over the course of days and days, which we're doing with this march. And because one thing that I'm learning walking along this march is just how deep the stories are and how deep the experiences are of people who are living as non-status people. For example, people who've been divided from their family for years and years and years. People who've lived here for more than a decade and still don't have status. People who lived underground. Imagine walking through the streets of any given city and just living in constant fear of ever having your identity checked because you'll be removed. Those are the kinds of things that come up when we're talking about the situation with non-status people.
Can you explain, when you demand the regularization of non-status people, can you explain what that is to listeners, regularization?
Well, regularization is a process by which people who are non-status, whether they're underground, whether they're failed refugee claimants, they have a clear, inclusive means by which to get status. That is to become permanent residents, basically. That is to prevent people who are non-status from ever being removed. As I mentioned, there are anywhere between 200,000 to 500,000 people living in Canada that are non-status. These aren't anonymous people. In places like Southern Ontario and in on the island of Montreal, these people are our neighbors, they're our friends, they're our coworkers, they're our classmates. I don't think you can walk a day in Toronto, certainly, or in Montreal or in Vancouver and not encounter at least several times somebody who is non-status. So this is something that affects a large number of people, and what we're basically asking for is a program which is full and inclusive, which will allow people who don't have status, don't have proper papers, so-called illegals, although we reject that term, that would allow non-status people to get status. And, I mean, just to maybe flesh out even more, in 1973, not that this was a perfect program, but in 73, there was a temporary regularization program that allowed up to 39,000 people to have their status regularized. And before that, their status was ambiguous or up in the air.
I read this week that the immigration minister has stated that a blanket amnesty for non-status people is out of question, and that any amnesty that the government would grant would only include workers in particular sectors such as construction or hotel workers in major cities. What is your response to this?
Well, there's a couple of things. One is we're not asking for an amnesty. An amnesty is something you give to excuse somebody. Criminals might get an amnesty. We're not asking for an amnesty. We're asking for a regularization program. There's nothing that a non-status person has to apologize for being in this country. People have migrated for centuries. They work. They migrate for all kinds of very understandable reasons. So there's no amnesty being asked for. And Volpe using that term amnesty is really misleading. Secondly, the kind of thing that he's talking about is really pandering to certain sectors of the economy where companies are demanding to have an exploited labor force that they want to legalize. That is namely the construction sector in Toronto. So Joe Volpe certainly isn't on the same page as we are right now when it comes to these issues. But that's why we need to do things like we're doing now, which is march to Ottawa and put these issues out in the public domain. For him to declare that there will never be a general public amnesty, as I said, the word amnesty is misleading, but is really a slap in the face to non-status migrants and, as I said, to their neighbors and their friends and their classmates and their co-workers, which is a huge segment of Canadian society. It's a slap in the face to them. And, you know, to even draw it out further, Joe Volpe, you know, I'm from Toronto, and Volpe's from Toronto. Volpe's an Italian from Toronto. And anybody in the immigrant community in Toronto knows full well that people have come here illegally, all right? We have grandparents, et cetera, that came here illegally, and then at some point they're able to regularize their status. And to write off that potential ability to get status in Canada by this next generation of people, as I said, is a huge slap in the face, but is also a rejection of a large segment of what Canadian history is, specifically the generations of people who came here in the late 60s and the 70s and the early 80s, the people who now make up the fabric of Southern Ontario, of Montreal, of the Lower Mainland of BC. If Volpe is applying the rules of today to that era, he wouldn't have been able to come to this country. So that's something that he has to understand.
On the Solidarity Across Borders website, it mentions the deportation industry. How do corporations profit from the deportations of refugees and non-status people?
Well, the Citizenship and Immigration Canada pays airlines like Air Canada and others to deport people. Our deportation industry isn't quite what it is in Europe or the United States, where they have, you know, full plane loads of people being shipped out. It's slightly more discreet in Canada, but still, it's a profit-making industry. And like with prisons, detention centers, if there's a profit to be made, there'll be people to make it and government to exploit it. So that's part of our opposition to deportations, that the removal of somebody from one country to another is, you know, to see that as some sort of industry to make a profit out of is just it's just shameful. And that's why we've highlighted that as well. And that's why in the past, this has worked well in Europe, there's been a lot of campaigns focusing on airlines and the people who work for the airlines, the unions of the various workers, especially pilots, to tell them to stop being complicit in a government policy of removing large segments of so-called non-status people.
Your march is inspired by Shamim Akhtar. Can you give a background on the struggle of Shamim and her family?
Yeah, well, Shamim Akhtar's case is it's kind of a microcosm of what the struggle is all about. You asked earlier about what it's like to be a non-status person. Well, Shamim Akhtar fled Pakistan in the year 2000. She and her family are Shia Muslims. Anybody who follows the news or knows anything about Pakistan knows there's an extraordinary sectarian conflict going on there between Sunnis and Shias. Mosques are blown up. Dozens of people are killed. You can just go to BBC website and put in there Shias and bombings, and you'll hear about dozens and dozens of people dying every month. So she fled that situation and came to the United States. September 11th happens. She and her family are living in a situation in the United States which is intolerable for a lot of South Asians, Muslims, Arab people. So she comes to Canada in 2002. And for 2 years, she and her husband and her daughters and her sons make a life for themselves. Her daughters in particular, Sadaf and Sadia, you know, learned French really quickly, became very popular students. And all of that ended in 2004 when they were deported and removed because their refugee claim was refused. Now, Shamim wasn't just somebody who came here and was making a claim. She was also an activist for her community. She was very active in demonstrations, at protests, and she was one of the founding members of Solidarity Across Borders. And at our first meeting, when people were discussing what are the kinds of things that we want to do, you know, put out a newspaper, do a demo, etc., she said, look, we've done demos. We've done delegation visits. We've written petitions. We got to do something bigger. And she proposed walking all the way to Ottawa. And we all laughed and then realized as the meeting went on that she was serious. And we just couldn't do it at the time. I don't think those of us who were involved in the organizing felt we were capable of doing that. And in 2004, she was deported. And finally, in 2005, she's not here as we undertake this march. I mean, just to maybe even make it you know, bring it home even more. I phoned Shamim just before the march started, but I couldn't talk to her about the march because she had just learned that her mother passed away. And so imagine how it feels to have someone close to you, a parent or a child, not only to be separated from them, but imagine if somebody close to you dies and you can't even go back to mourn properly. That's exactly what all non-status people live through. That kind of anguish, things that we take for granted, or the choices that we have and the opportunities that we have, other people don't. And that's fundamentally unjust.
Who are some of the groups participating in the march?
Well, some of the key groups are the Action Committee of Non-Status Algerians. There's a family, actually, who've been regularized, but are still participating in solidarity with others. There's the Coalition Against the Deportation of Palestinians. On Sunday, we had a few non-status Zimbabweans who attended the demonstration. There are Mexican non-status people who, a family actually, with two kids, who have joined the march. There are, I mean, I can go on and on, but there's a whole cross-section of people, Iranian refugees. There's a Tunisian man who was accepted, but he wants to march in solidarity with others. He was just accepted on May 17th, but he's marching in solidarity with others. In his mind, he won the lottery because it is, he says, arbitrary in a lottery to get accepted, and others can't expect that, so he's marching with others as well. So, and you have a ton of people who are allies here, you know, people who aren't non-status people, who are Quebecers, Canadians, people who aren't afraid of being deported, but they're here as well in solidarity, because I think it's fair to say that a lot of people who want to march can't march. They can't march not because they're not physically capable. I think there are a lot of people here who'd march for 2 years if they had to. They can't march because they're afraid of being arrested, because they're underground, they're illegal, so you can't do something terribly public like a march. There are other people who, as I mentioned before, are working in some of the most exploited sectors of the economy, so it's very difficult to ask your boss for a day off or 2 days off to go on a march when you're only getting paid $4 an hour and if you know, you only get two washroom breaks in an entire day. So a lot of the people here are marching for those who can't march. And we're about a core of about 100, 150 people, with people coming and going every day. And by Saturday, we'll be in Ottawa.
How has the march been going thus far? What has been the response from people that you've talked to along the route?
Well, I mean, the 2 days in Montreal, that's when we saw the most people, because as you get out of Montreal, you get into smaller and smaller communities and see fewer and fewer people. But the response in Montreal was pretty overwhelming. And when I say overwhelming, not just I'm saying that descriptively, I mean, as an organizer, it's kind of overwhelming in the sense that a lot of people who are directly affected, non-status people, they're getting in touch now and wanting help on their cases. And it's hard to navigate that. I mean, the amount of work that goes into just working on in solidarity with just any one person who might be in sanctuary, who might be underground, who might be facing a deportation, it's enormous. And imagine taking that and multiplying that by 100 or 200 or 300, and that's what's happening. There are people phoning who are going to be joining the march, who want help, who are from Mauritania. We had a person who phoned from the detention center, who phoned our march cell. So in that sense, it's been pretty overwhelming. It's not necessarily reflected in people being on the march, but I think the effect of the march is not so much, you know, during the march itself. It's the people who know about it, who have heard about it, and hopefully, if they're directly affected, who feel more empowered because they know that they're not alone. Because that's, I guess, one of the worst things to feel, is you feel like you're alone in this society and nobody cares about you, and if they do care about you, it's to get you arrested and get you removed. And instead, there are people here who are willing to take the steps necessary to stand in solidarity, and I think people are feeling that. And so, I mean, this is something that's hopefully going to build.
What are you hoping the march will accomplish?
Well, I mean, I hope it accomplishes our demands. That's an easy way to answer that question. I mean, we want a full and inclusive regularization program. We have 12 principles very clearly outlined that explain what we mean by regularization. So that's a very clear goal. So, I mean, that's a simple answer. I think a more involved answer that I could give is the following. I'm hoping that this march builds a movement and builds solidarity. The Zapatistas have an expression, walking we ask questions, which means that, you know, you don't have all the answers beforehand and then you get involved in a political campaign. As you're involved in a campaign, as you're involved in a movement, as you're involved in a political struggle, you're navigating how you go about struggling, how you sustain struggle, how you are able to struggle effectively. And one thing that is hard to quantify, and one thing that's even hard for me to describe to you in words, is the movement building that happens when you share moments with people, when you're sharing being tired together, when you're sharing discomfort, or when you're just able to talk with people and learn those experiences. Those are very precious times. Also, in just organizing something like this, you learn about the capacity of a movement. You learn about all the contacts out there. You learn that, you know, that you could build a very strong refugee rights movement with the help of doctors and lawyers who are here helping us, with the help of all kinds of people who refuse to be accomplices in the removal policy of migrants, but instead want to build a culture of solidarity. So, I mean, that's what I'm talking about. What we're building is a culture of solidarity where when people are exploited, we don't turn away. When people are exploited, we don't turn them in. But when people are being exploited and they're unjust, we stand with them, not to help them like charity workers, but to share in the struggle and to walk with them. And I think that's the more involved thing here. And I've been really seeing this as I've never seen before by doing this march.
Finally, how can listeners support the march and the struggles of non-status people?
There's a couple of ways you can support the march. One is to get in touch with Immigration Minister Joel Volpe. Get in touch with him this week. Tell him that you support a full and inclusive regularization program. Tell Joel Volpe that he should meet the marchers when we arrive in Ottawa. That's one thing you can do. The second thing that you can do is try to get on a bus or a car and come to Ottawa on June 25th, this Saturday. We're going to be on Parliament Hill at 4, and I know the marchers here will love to see a huge welcome by people from Ottawa, but people from elsewhere. And thirdly, check out our website, which is solidarityacrossborders.org, and there you'll get more ideas, such as sending donations, endorsements. We've gotten endorsements from all bunch of sectors, from radical student groups to unions, to churches. A whole cross-section of society is coming out and supporting us. So we want your endorsement. We want your support, whether it's a financial endorsement or whether it's sending a letter of support or an email. Get on our website and check it out and send us your words of support. Whether you're a local collective or whether you're a big union, either way, your support is appreciated. So those are just a couple of ways you can help out. And I guess the last thing I'd say is get in touch with your local media and encourage them to cover the story, because when non-status people who aren't here read about this or hear about this through the mainstream media, whether they're in Southern Ontario, whether they're in Montreal, whether they're in Vancouver or elsewhere, it's empowering, I think, to know that this is happening, to know that there's, 100, 200 people actually walking all the way to Ottawa, not for some charity purpose, but to demand a regularization program that would actually do a lot to stop the anguish and misery that a lot of non-status people feel. So those are a lot of ways people can support. But I guess tangibly, come to Ottawa on June 25th and phone Joel Volpe. Those are the two priorities.